there, it's Janae Desmond-Harris, aka Dear Prudence, and I want you to tell me about all your problems. Each week on Slate's Dear Prudence podcast, I'm here to tackle your questions about relationships, sex, work, family, and beyond, all with the help of an expert guest. We'll help you navigate it all, whether you're a teen dealing with parents, an adult looking to spice up your sex life, or you just need some validation that you're not losing it. We're here to listen and to offer some guidance. Need help? Just ask Prudy. New episodes every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You know, it made sense. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
What about you, Nige?
I wanted to be a firefighter, like, ever since I was little. I just loved, like, the, like, whole brotherhood of, like, the whole thing. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all the toxic masculinity. just, like, running up and down, like, the fire tower.
Getting
and
that pole action,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. That's, like, that's a very slept-on part of the job. I used to have these boots when I was a little kid, and I would put on my little firefighter boots, and I'd be naked, and I had a firefighter helmet.
What?
And I'd dance in my front yard on the lawn naked when I was like 3 years old.
Someone call 911. That little boy is having too good of a time.
Little boy is hot.
He's hot.
Put him out.
What's up, guys? It's actor Marcus Scribner, a.k.a. Junior from Black-ish.
Musician Snail Mail.
Comedian Joel Kim Booster.
YouTuber Lord DIY.
Then you enter it. What? The last part?
And you are listening to Adultish from YR Media and Radiotopia.
I never had a drop before. This is fun.
Welcome back, everybody, to Adult-ish, a show that's for the young and the young at heart, where we talk about adult schlop-lop and Nige wearing boots and nothing else. I'm Merc.
And I'm Nige, who wears boots and nothing else. And today we're bringing it back to where everything all started and getting into our roots-ish episode. It's just about how our beginnings have led to our present day. We figure because it's the middle of season two, we should just kick it with y'all. No extra guests.
Plus, we wanted a space for all of you to get to know us better. So, Nige, do you want to tell them what your personal story is all about?
For show, for show. When we were planning this episode, I first heard the word roots. It immediately made me think of the movie, which in turn made me think of slavery. So I'm going to tell y'all all about a story that also aired on WNYC Snap Judgment. Be sure to check that show out. It's about my first time going to a slave plantation and how I got a little revenge.
Then I'm going to tell you about how me getting a haircut relates to really intense feelings my parents have about their war-torn pasts. Thanks, Vietnam War.
But that's coming up later.
So for this first campfire story, I'm going to be quiet, go into the corner, and roast some imaginary marshmallows. Nige, the floor is all yours.
Thank you. You can throw me off with the Vietnam War line.
So August is my favorite month. Every year, my family goes on an African-American-themed cruise called the Black Cruise. Just picture your regular cruise, replace shuffleboard with a basketball court, switch out chicken strips with jambalaya, and get rid of whatever weak cruise ship a cappella group and insert Fantasia. And this year, the cruise departs from New Orleans. But the morning that we're set to depart, I wake up to a text from my dad. Meet me at the hotel lobby, ... Now, ... You know how old people text. When I get down, I'm surprised to see my dad wearing his famous mowing the lawn sun hat. And my Uncle Al, I'm surprised to see him too in his not-so-famous New Balance walking shoes. Immediately, I know I'm in for something. What's going on, Dad? Don't worry about it. I see. A little father and son and uncle bonding time. I'm with it. A luxury tour bus pulls up to the curb, and suddenly all these people pile out of the hotel and start boarding. So we're going on a wine tour. My dad, uncle, and I hop on last. As I'm walking up the stairs, I see a digital sign above the bus driver's head. Plantation tour. Wait, what? This is definitely not planned by the Black Cruise. And to make things worse, there was not a single Black person in this bus of at least 70 people. Mostly white, the rest Asian. The only seats that are open, thank God, are in the front row. We sit down and I turn to my dad. Yo, we're really going to a plantation? Like, on purpose? I've never gone before. To be honest, even though I believe it's really important to learn about your family's past, slavery is something I'm comfortable only reading about. The bus driver, an older Black man, must have overheard what I said because he turns around. I was thinking the same thing. Y'all the first Black people I ever seen on here. Then the bus driver starts driving.
So to your left, we have sugarcane fields. Now, most people, when they think about slavery, they think about cotton picking. But most wealthy plantation owners converted at least half of their land into sugarcane.
Everyone was so intrigued. I even see a young white guy with tortoiseshell glasses writing in a notebook. Was he taking notes? On what? How to run a plantation? The bus driver quickly interrupts my thought with,
"Who here loves the movie Django?"
You know I raise my hand. And when I look around, no hands. I slowly lower mine. All these people are going on a plantation tour, taking notes, and have never heard of Django?
Well, on your right, we have the Candyland Plantation from Django.
I start to hear the oohs and ahs. The person behind me comments on the beautiful outdoor staircase that leads from the front garden to the balcony on the second floor. The phones are out. I hear someone say, "Look at those tall white pillars." I turn to my dad. "Hey, say what you want about them slave masters, but they could sure build a house, huh?" My dad just rolls his eyes and keeps listening to the tour. So we finally get to our intended plantation, and the place is creepier than the bus ride. The employees at the plantation are walking around in full 1800s slave master fits. To my left is the big house, which is the term that the slave owners actually referred to their own houses as. And then to the right, about 100 yards away, are the slave quarters. And right in front of the slave quarters was a gift shop and a restaurant. A restaurant that I hear is known for its all-you-can-eat pancakes. The overall vibe is far too festive, touristy, disrespectful. Everyone seems to be doing a lot more reminiscing than reflecting. While I can't help but look at the way that the Spanish moss hangs and sways off the trees, I think about the bodies that likely did the same over this ground. It also reminded me of my dining room back home, where we have in picture frames the actual slave bill of sale papers from my dad's side of the family. It's hanging right next to a picture of our family today. Apparently, my dad's ancestors kicked it at the same plantation that Nat Turner was at. That's why my last name is Turner. So looking at the Spanish moss hits me in all sorts of ways, because being here on this plantation, I can almost imagine slavery happening to me. It's hard to put into words, but... Nigel! My dad breaks me out of my trance. I run and catch up to the start of the plantation tour, which is right by a mint julep drink stand. I'm surprised to see a young Black woman working at the station, cause she's like the only Black employee here. The idea of getting a celebratory drink for this occasion was stupid, but at this point, seeing another Black person feels like home, so I walk over. My dad too. I guess we'll have a mint julep. She looks at me. Bourbon or rum? I look at my dad to call the shots on this one, but he just shrugs. Even though I'm not allowed to make 21 and up decisions, I confidently reply, let's go with the bourbon. While she's making the drink, through some type of Black telepathy, I try my hardest to communicate how strange this place is to the employee.
But message was not received.
As I'm walking away, I quickly double back and say, "This is weird, right?" And before I can even finish my sentence, she goes, "Weird as hell." We begin the tour. Our tour guide is wearing a long tan suit jacket and a white shirt with frills on it. Nervously, he says, I just want to say, by no means are we condoning what happened. We are just showing people the history of this land. It seems as if the tour guide is looking for us to pardon him on behalf of all black people. So my dad, uncle, and I nod. The big house is still in great condition. Even I catch myself marveling at the architecture for brief moments. The way the ceiling is beautifully hand-designed, white borders that match the borders on the floor, leading to the fireplace with so much detail. Then my eye catches an extremely worn down spot in the corner of the room. What's that over there? Oh, they would usually have a slave boy that stood there at every meal, pulling a rope the entire time to activate a fan over the dinner table. My palms got really sweaty. He continues the rest of the tour, but none of it really sticks. I'm zoned out. How many slave boys stood there for hours, pulling a rope to fan the room? I now wish that I didn't ask that question, that I didn't notice that spot. Like how I almost forgot to notice that if this is a slave plantation tour, how come there aren't any employees dressed as slaves walking around? I start to feel lightheaded, as if I might faint. Then I find myself being dragged outside. The next thing you know, I'm at the back of the big house with my dad. Just me and him. He says, "Hey, you good?" "Yeah, I'm fine. It's just a lot." He nods, saying, "I know. It's crazy seeing how our family was treated worse than animals, isn't it?" Then he looks at the big house. Then at me. Underneath his mowing the lawn sun hat, a devious smile grows on his face. He takes a step forward towards the house, first staring at the ground where his feet sink into the dirt, then scanning the house intensely. His face says one shot of curious, two shots of scared of what these walls have seen. Then he looks back at me and says, "Hey, spit on it." What? Out of all the things that he could have said in that moment, that was the furthest from my mind. Spit? Yes, the house. Spit on it. I don't know. And I swing my head to look if anybody's around. No one. Then he starts doing the puts his back into it, harks up a huge loogie, and honestly, that was the most disgusting thing I've seen my dad do. But as soon as he did it, it felt like the air got easier to breathe. My dad's laughing like a mischievous kid and says, "Now it's your turn, for all the people who didn't get a chance to spit on it before." So I get the biggest loogie that my throat can muster, put my back into it, and spit on the house. Suddenly, my body feels lighter, and I can't stop laughing. I know spitting on the house is not that big of a deal, but it felt like a secret I had from the plantation. My rebellious little Nat Turner moment. "All right, Naj, let's go. This is the last place I'm trying to get left at." My dad and I get on the bus, greet our bus driver, and look out the window the whole way back. My dad leans over and says, "You can't let that happen, Naj." I'm confused. Let what happen? And as soon as the words left my mouth, I knew what all this was for. Leland Turner, notorious for his over-the-top teaching methods. You know what I always say when it comes to you and your brother, right? I'm raising lions. You can't let anyone make you feel smaller than you are. You'll feel this more when you get older, and I know you feel like I'm a little extreme, but when situations arise later in life, I want you to be able to see it for what it is. Don't let any surroundings shrink you. Always spit on the house. Always.
So let's say you have kids in the future. First of all, what would you name them?
Amina and Zion.
Ooh, pretty. Got the
You didn't expect me to have them that quick.
Oh,
huh?
No, I didn't. Okay. next question. Do you think you'd take them to a plantation?
Yeah, I for sure would. For me, personally, when I went, it definitely sucked. But just going, it exposed me to a lot about my past feelings that I had about my culture and my past that I didn't really even know were there. I think that's like really common with Black culture is you have like these feelings about your past that you're not really able to process because, I mean, your knowledge and connection to those things are very limited. So if I have kids, they will be somewhat Black. So I will need to take them there to expose them to that and just be able to coach them through it and talk it out.
So when you, your dad, and New Balance wearing Uncle Al were on the bus, your dad said he's, quote, raising lions. What exactly did he mean by that? Because I got major Game of Thrones House Lannister lion vibes from that.
I would like to think that we were more from the north, but yeah. But I mean, what he really means by like we're raising lions is something that he used to always tell us like when we were younger, and every time like he would be like too hard on us or too like overprotective or like really harp on like a point for like really long, mm-hmm. he was just like, I'm raising lions, like it's not supposed to be easy.
Oh.
So that's what he meant by I'm raising lions. But by saying spit on the house, my dad was saying don't let them get to you.
But who's them?
You know who them are.
I mean, I know who them is for me. I don't know who
know
them
that.
Is for you.
You know who they are. All right. So them, it's like a rap song, basically. They never thought I would be there. Y'all thought I wouldn't do. So it's y'all, it's them, it's they, it's everybody.
It's the haters.
And yeah, the whole collective group of people who would judge you by the color of your skin. Like, all the people who I was kind of like internalizing all of that from, like throughout the story, just all the other people who were on the tour, who were making me feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. who were saying insensitive things, who put up the, you know, all you can eat pancake sign at the plantation. It's all of them. Don't let that get to you and don't let that ever like make you compromise who you are.
Mm. Shout out to Papa Turner for that.
Yeah. Shout outs to Papa Turner. He definitely has unconventional ways of teaching lessons and things because that probably could have been in a conversation. But but I do appreciate it. I do feel like I learned a lot. So shout out to my father. So, Merk, how about you tell us about your story?
So I took our roots challenge, if you call it that, pretty literal. I made this a few months ago when I was living in New York. So you're about to hear from both of my parents who might say some things that could be offensive, and for that, I just wanted to apologize in advance. However, I won't apologize for their heavy Vietnamese accents because that's just part of who they are. All right, let's go. Long, undyed, and worn down all the way to your mid-back. That's the traditional way for Vietnamese women to wear their hair. And it's how I wore mine for the last 22 years. It's also how my parents, who immigrated to the US in the 80s from Vietnam, are used to seeing me. I was born and raised in Washington State, but I moved to Brooklyn. And to match the badass person I want to become in this new city, your girl really wants to get her locks chopped. I'm talking like Sergeant Calhoun from Wreck-It Ralph. Short, pixie-ish hair coming down just to the ears and with a buzz cut underneath. It's pretty much the signature look of New York City, and I wanted to look the part. But cutting my hair that short would probably make my immigrant parents think I'm shedding my Viet roots. Literally.
Hi, Em.
Hi, Ba.
Ba, yay, yoy. Ba, yay, yoy.
Mm-hmm. This is me telling my dad, who I call Ba, about my decision to redo my do.
So I'm going to get my hair cut really short.
Oh. It doesn't look like a boy. It doesn't look like a girl. But I call it the lesbian style.
My dad's telling me I'll look lesbian. And I don't know how his statement makes me feel. When I told Matt, my mom.
Okay. Oh, last thing before I go. So, Matt, I'm going to get my hair cut.
Really? How short?
Like super short. Like, probably run my ears short, Matt.
Oh, no. Be careful. Why?
Why not?
Too short. Short under the ear. Okay. But short go up. No. Communist. Make it calm.
Communist. My mom thinks I'll look like a communist. And she has good reason for me not wanting to look like one. Both my mom and dad were born in Vietnam during the war, and their families identified with South Vietnam, which was fighting against the communist North. One of my mom's earliest memories takes place in Hue, her hometown that was under attack. She ran with her family from their home into a church for refuge. They hid in the pews, hearing bombs explode and stained glass from the windows shattering all around them. When my dad was 5, his dad was shot dead by a communist. Both of my parents fled to the U.S. to escape communism. But now, they run an auto body repair shop in Washington and have lived in this country for more than 30 years. Despite that, they still see themselves as Vietnamese.
The lifestyle of Vietnamese.
My dad says we're Vietnamese people, not American people. But for me, I'm Vietnamese and American. I might look Asian in the U.S., but I never feel more American than when I'm visiting Vietnam. Probably because my Viet accent sucks. And so, here in the States, I think cutting my hair would feel freeing. Not just from my parents being able to tell me what to do, but also from the weight of our intergenerational war trauma.
Okay, and the pop pictures?
Yes. Like, something like this. Looks super cool.
Mm-hmm. And then so back is very short too.
Oh yeah.
Like a side.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah.
I went to a place in Lower Manhattan called Nagi Hair, a Japanese hair salon. I figured they'd know how to work with my hair type. And they also probably wouldn't judge me like I'm afraid a Viet salon would. The hairstylist got right into it. She picked a big chunk of my hair from below my shoulders and helped me bid farewell.
Oh yeah, no later, never again.
Next came the buzz. Can I touch it?
Yep.
Yeah. Whoa, that's so cool. It's like my brother's head. But I love it, oh my gosh. And finally, the finished product. It's so soft and it looks so fresh. It was longish on top, about mid-ear length. I could flip it to the left or right, and there was a gradual fade down to an undercut. All right, so the hair has been cut. it feels colder, but oh my gosh, it feels so much happier. Oh my goodness. But I was still nervous about how my parents would take it. We've got a family group chat with my two older siblings where we spam each other with pictures of ourselves. I had to tone down my selfie game, but didn't want to disappear completely, so I started sending them old pics of me with long hair, as a decoy. I finally called them one night on Skype during dinner, when we all usually talk. My heart was beating fast because I didn't know what to expect from them. At the start of the call, I pointed my camera to the ceiling before the reveal.
Hello, I don't see too light, I say.
What the light here for?
Oh, she cut her hair.
Even before I popped into the frame, my mom already knew what was up.
There you go, I'm so smart.
I gave him a 360 view.
Whoa. Wow.
So, mom said it looked stylish, or mot, definitely not like the communist cut she had imagined. My dad, on the other hand.
Oh, wow.
That's a bien boy. Bien boy, I can't believe he do that.
Show me your side profile. Looks like
he kept calling me a lesbian boy, or bien boy as he calls it. It's wrong on a lot of levels, and his mockery made me feel bad. But I didn't say anything because I was already feeling vulnerable and wanted to put up a tough front. And then he said,
"Okay."
He said, "I don't want to look anymore," and turned his head away. It felt like a punch in the stomach. My fears about how he'd react came true.
That now you have to put a mask back.
He said, put on a mustache because I look like a dude. Still hurtful. But over the course of our conversation, I could see him beginning to come around.
So any negative feelings about this at all?
No. It's a style. It's okay. Even the boss call it bin boy, but it's a style. I have to understand. Young children nowadays, you do whatever you want. But I like it. It's okay. The hair will grow back up. Okay, you own your hair, you own your body, not your there. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, yeah. That's for only for this year. Next year can be grow back up, right?
Well, what happens if I want to keep it this short?
I'm feeling freedom. You do whatever you want to do. Whatever you do, no tattoo. Not like your sister. Imagine when you get old.
But how can you be old and wise if you're never dumb and young? Well, at least my dad says, with a mouthful of food, that he believes in freedom. Which, after all, is why he and my mom came to the U.S. in the first place. You know, I'll probably always look like Lil Merc in their eyes, and what I do might not always be what they want. But at the end of the day, I'm my own Vietnamese-American woman, and I want them to respect my choices. But I didn't expect that this haircut would let me know that I do have that.
So, Merc, did you expect that your dad was going to have a negative response?
When we were at the kitchen table?
Uh-huh.
I actually was, but I wasn't sure to what extent it would hurt me. Mm. Like, when he first said that, I was being like, ha ha ha, making jokes and stuff because I was kind of deflecting that rejection. But when I was editing this and I was listening back to the tape and I kept hearing him say, like, I don't want to look anymore, it felt like I was getting punched in the gut over and over again, because to have one of your parents look at you kind of like in a disgusted way, it hurts.
Well, when it was a negative response, did that like influence how you felt about yourself or how you felt about the haircut? Like when you went home and looked in the mirror after you heard those comments, were you just like, dang?
I mean, yeah, it kind of made me second guess a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm such a people pleaser child that any time I disappoint my parents, I'm like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? I have to fix it. But I think by moving away, I was able to not revert to that kid mentality of I have to please them and more of like, well, this is who I am. And it's a bummer he didn't like it, but he did say your body, your choice. So ultimately, I do feel good about my decision. My sister, she went through the same kind of thing when she first got tatted, and now she's got two full sleeves, and I know he loves her just the same, and yeah, it was hard to deal with at first for her, but she did it. I'm doing it. My hair looks good.
Are you going to keep it short, or like, do you want to get it back long, or what?
Actually, so because I buzzed it, I want to see how long it takes to grow from full on root to where it was, but I plan on getting it chopped right after that. So then I'll know, like, okay, maybe not the buzz cut here, blah, 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 blah.
But, like, go for, like, a little, like, bob thing. You just bob thing. Back and forth.
Oh, rock my PTA mom. Bob.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Adultish, a show produced by YR Media, a national network of young artists and journalists creating content for this generation. Check us out at adultishpodcast.com.
Thanks to our senior producer, Davey Kim, our social media graphics queen, Ajani. Special thanks to Sam Greenspan for editing my hair story. Y'all, he's also got a brilliant podcast called Bellwether. Be sure to check that out.
Thanks to Rebecca Martin, our executive producer, and Gandhi Joe Johnson, who composed today's music, along with producer Moneymaker and our boss, Davey, whose voice you've never heard on this show until now.
Adultish is also part of the Radiotopia fam by PRX, an independent collective of some of the most fabulous shows in all of podcasting. Get it at radiotopia.fm.
Oh my gosh, everybody, wait. Stop what you're doing because we got some free-ish we want to mail you. It's a White Claw size adultish coaster.
Or a coaster for whatever skinny can drink you're sipping on. Just give us a quick 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app or on iTunes if you don't got an iPhone. It'll take 15 seconds. Do it on the toilet. Do it whenever you feel like procrastinating on something else. Just do it. Nike.
Yep, then send your address to any of our socials at YRAdultish or our email adultish@yrmedia.org and we'll snail mail it to you. For reals though, everybody, it'll mean so much to all of us. It'll allow us to produce so many more episodes that hopefully all of you will love.
And download so you can hear us for the rest of your lives. And with that, we are going to give you kisses. Goodbye.
Yee, we out.
Radiotopia.